The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Well done, everybody. You've almost made it to Friday. I only consider you've made it once the Friday's done. But happy Friday. It's Squawkbox. Got a really busy day for you, including massive headlines, including the following. Amazon missing revenue forecast for the first time in 3 years as the e-commerce giant faces tough pandemic comparisons and warns the slower growth will continue. Makeup and perfume sales leading L'Oreal to a second quarter sales beat, with revenue rising more than 30% as consumers venture out of lockdown. We're going to hear from the new CEO, Nicolas Hieronimus, at 1300 CET.
Building on strong prices, the Swiss materials group Holcim posting record results for the first half, and it sees margin increases across all regions. We will catch up with the CEO a little later here on Squawk Box. Plus, the exchange operator Euronext posts a more than 5% rise in second quarter net income amid a listings boom. We will speak to the chairman and the CEO, Stefan Buzna. That's at 7:45 CET.
Plus, the Italian banking group UniCredit holding exclusive talks to buy Banco Monte dei Paschi in a deal brokered by Rome. The first major move for the new CEO, Andrea Orsel. Just running my eye down the number of headlines on BNP Paribas, which has reported a second quarter net income of just under 3 billion euros. That is up almost 27% compared with the same period last year, and an 18% gain compared to the second quarter in 2019 prior to the pandemic. Overall revenue was also modestly higher, coming in at around 12 billion euros. Well, Charlotte caught up with the CFO, Lars Machinel, and asked where the growth came from last quarter.
The rebound is locked in, and we are well positioned to accelerate growth. And if you look at it, indeed, the revenues are up both versus 2020, which was a peculiar year, if I can say, and also versus 2019. As such, the gross operating income, revenues minus cost, they are up 22% compared to 2019. And as such, above pre-pandemic levels, and driven by cost control, our platforms, and market share gains. So basically, 2021 clocks in at a historic high. In the first 6 months of 2021, bottom line is 300 million above 2019, so we have a flying start for the next plan. And if you look rapidly in our three businesses, domestic markets, revenues up 10% on the back of increasing volumes and fee generated. On IFS, we saw solid activity, for example, Bank of the West. And on CIB, we saw a very good level of activity following the exceptional performance in 2020, and the bottom line is up 3%.
Looking at the details of your divisions that you just went through quickly, the one that caught my attention is domestic markets, but one that's always been a little bit more difficult. And here you mentioned in particular rebound in networks, particularly in France. So can you drill in there where the performance came from in that specific division?
Sure. If you look at it, well, of course, there is a pickup in the economy. If you look at the volume of card transactions, of corporate transactions, of digital transactions, they are really up. And so that basically means that volumes are up, credits are up, commissions are up, and all that basically fuels that. And it's in the plain activity, but also, and in particularly in the specialized services. If you look at our car fleet management, Arval and the likes, they really have very strong activity.
Let's talk about Siemens Health and Ears, and we'll come back to BNP Paribas a little bit later on in the programme. And I know we're going to talk some more about the banks because we've also got UniCredit lined up. But Siemens Health and Ears delivering another strong set of numbers here. And I think by my reckoning, This is the third occasion this year when they've revised up their guidance. So the message coming through from Siemens Healthineers, we now see full year comparable revenue growth of 17 to 19% compared to the previously lifted guidance back in May of 14 to 17%. The earnings per share coming in at 0.35 euros vis the 0.27 euros a year earlier. I could take you through the numbers in more detail, but I think perhaps more useful as I just note the 5 billion euro group revenue line on Q3. If I get out to Bernd Montag, the CEO of Siemens Healthineers. Bernd, great to have you back with us on the program here. So another opportunity to lift your guidance, but I note that there is a little bit of caution on the fourth quarter when you talk about perhaps some of the COVID-related business lines beginning to slow. Just help us understand what your expectation is.
Yeah, thank you for the question and thank you for having me. I mean, first of all, this has been a historic quarter for us. I mean, this was also the quarter in which we closed the transformative acquisition of Varian. Oops, sorry. And the team really delivered, despite the pandemic and this on top effort, an incredible quarter with 39% growth. But coming back to your question regarding the outlook for the remainder of the year, yes, as we said, we had peak revenues of antigen testing in the past quarter. And it's maybe good news for societies that we don't need them as much anymore. On the other hand, we will see a strong rebound now of U.S. revenues and a normalization of our business to, let's say, the pre-pandemic logic.
Which I guess then plays to other parts of the business like the medical imaging space. Can you just talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing there? Because as I look at the COVID cases still here in the UK, the hospitals are still finding it difficult to get back to business as was and the treatment of other diseases.
Well, I see maybe two answers here. On the one hand, I see globally that healthcare providers have found very well ways to cope with non-COVID-related healthcare. And we see activities more or less on pre-pandemic levels worldwide. The pandemic, though, has changed how people buy. We saw a lot of demand from the public sector, especially in Europe in the last 9 months, while the US, which is of more private nature in healthcare, was a bit muted when it comes to making investment decisions. And now we see a strong rebound of the US market in imaging, but also in the new segment Varian, which will carry our growth moving forward.
Bernd, good morning to you, sir. There was a whole very awkward conversation for many parties about IP waivers as regards some of the technology regarding specifically the pharmaceuticals, the drugs themselves, which are being used to combat COVID in the pandemic as well. But it was an awkward conversation for the industry as well. And it brought the public sector, private sector partnership to an awkward stage at one point. I just wondered if you wanted to chip in about the role of IP waivers and actually whether new technology, whether it be in your area or indeed the pharmaceutical area as well, whether is the role of that going forward amidst this pandemic?
Yeah, I may be not the best person to answer this one, yeah, because in our industry, we are not so much in an IP game. Yeah, we are in a first-to-market game, and we have patent exchange agreements with all major competitors. Yeah, so the business model in our part of healthcare is very different from the one in pharma. Yeah, so from that point of view, this is not a topic we are particularly concerned with. Yeah, and that's why I don't think I should comment on this one. Yeah.
I think you are a very interested voice on this as well, Ben. I wouldn't put yourself down on that one as well. But the reason I ask it is because I was speaking to Pascal Sorio yesterday about the flack that he has come in for actually, despite the fact that they're producing vast amounts of COVID drugs at cost as well. And I was just basically thinking about the public-private relationship going forward, because, of course, you do need public sector support in order to sell your products to various health systems around the world. But at the same time, of course, they are thinking about the common good and about the profitability of this sector as well. Is profit under threat because of the public relationship with companies such as yourself?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think what the pandemic has shown, yeah, and I like what you said about public-private partnership in a larger sense, is that societies have understood that a functioning healthcare system is not a luxury, it's not a cost factor, but it is an essential part of a competitive infrastructure and of welfare. Yeah, and teaming up with governments, yeah, for solving these challenges, as we did, by the way, with the antigen testing, yeah, which was mainly the public was our customer, is what we have done. And new models of collaboration are certainly more and more coming, and I'm very, very much grateful for that development.
Bernd, a real pleasure catching up with you this morning. Best of luck with the coming quarter, and thanks for giving us your time. Bernd Montag, the CEO of Siemens Health and Ears, which has lifted its guidance going forward. Let's catch up on UniCredit. I said we'd take another look at this. There are some positive lines here in the UniCredit story, and I think it rounds out what has been, by and large, with one or two notable exceptions, obviously, a stronger period for the European banking space. So we've got a net fee income coming through on the second quarter of 1.67 billion euros. That was better than the company's own guidance at 1.62 billion. The CET1 ratio, fully loaded end of June, 15.5%. So strong capital levels. The group giving us a full year total revenue line in line with the previous guidance of circa 17.1 billion. Underlying net profit in at 1.1 billion. And I know the line you all want me to take a look at, that's around the NPL and the non-performing exposure. Well, the number continues to be, I think, high by longer term historical standards. The gross non-performing exposure ratio at the end of June, 4.7%. But when you look at the net loan write-down, 360 million euro as against 647 million that was provided in previous guidance, which raises a couple of questions. Have some of those exposures now gone the other side of the ledger and those clients and customers are beginning to pay back what they owe? Or is the company at this stage just slowing the pace at which it's writing those off because it thinks that they will come on side again? Obviously not clear from the just plain numbers report that we've got this morning, but it is something that I think the markets will continue to look at as they finally see a lot of these Eurozone banks dealing with these 10-year-old plus legacies of NPLs. The group just giving us a line on net profit, full year 21, expected to be above 3 billion euros with the underlying cost of risk guidance improved to below 40 basis points. Just on the UniCredit story, the company has announced it is in exclusive talks with the Italian government over a tie-up with the state-owned lender Monte dei Paschi. Rome has long obviously signalled UniCredit is the ideal buyer for MPS, but the deal was thrown into doubt earlier this month after the UniCredit boss Andrea Orsel laid out a strict set of acquisition conditions. On Thursday, Orsel, however, said the bank had signed a term sheet with the Italian Treasury to buy out parts of MPS. A deal could be announced by September, Steve.
You and I are going to get an easy day today after the massive, I think we had 15 CEOs on the shows yesterday, but the producers just brutal today. I mean, okay, have a look at this. This is what I thought we were going to have a nice, easy Friday, big Thursday. We can relax a little bit. We've already spoken to Lars Machinel. We spoke to Bernd Montag. We're coming up after the break on this earnings. I mean, this is our day. Marco Alvera, Jean-Pascal Tricoire will join us at 7:30 Central European Time. Stéphane Boujnah a couple of minutes later than that. Katie Murray, CFO of NatWest. What is the government doing? Well, what it's doing is selling its stake at a big loss as well. Jan Jenisch from Holcim, newly branded Holcim as well. Francesco Starachi from Enel, 8:30 CET. And then your interview with John Dacey, always a nice chat, that one, CFO of Swiss Re. Look, what my problem then is that, well, obviously, then these three are on street signs, but kind of, even though we'll be exhausted by then, I kind of feel like can we not move a couple of moments? No, anyway. Luca de Meyers, yeah, right now, my street signs colleagues will get upset with me. Stefan Sturm of Fresenius, and then Benoit Coquart, the CEO of Le Grand later on as well. So it's absolutely huge day once again. And after that, we can relax then as well. But coming up on the show, I already mentioned Snam. Now, they've posted a jump in quarterly revenue and dividend policy is confirmed as well. We're going to speak to this gentleman, Marco Alvera, coming up next. And I'll tell you what, he's also got a new book out talking about hydrogen as well. I've got it on my desk, actually, as well. Anyway, as Jeff's about to tell you, it's been a big week.
Yeah, just a reminder to our audience, if you want to catch up on any of the conversations that we've had, you can do that, of course, by one, taking a look at the website, and two, just visiting the Squawk Box podcast. It's a very neat summary of the kind of earnings week we've had. We'll be right back, everybody.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
The best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
Right, Italian energy infrastructure firm Snam has confirmed its guidance and dividend policy for 2021 as adjusted net profit rises 10% in the first half of the year. I'm going to show you, ladies and gentlemen, something that's going to make you jealous now. Not necessarily Marco Alvera, who is a lovely man in himself as well, CEO of Snam, but look where he is. Look at that. That's just beautiful behind you. What a lovely morning, Marco. You are so lucky to be where you are. How are you, sir?
I had to share this with you. I'm in Rome. It's a beautiful day. I'm good. Yeah. We had announced good results yesterday and the book's coming out, so it's all looking good now.
Yeah, I'll come to the book in a few moments' time, actually, because I actually got a sneak preview on my desk as we speak. So that's very nice of your team to send me one of those, Marco. But look, in terms of the numbers as well, are you happy with the figures today?
We're happy. It was a good first half. Net income was up. But the most important figure for us is investments. And, you know, we're a company that has to deploy the capital, has to get projects done. It's the 14th year in a row that we deliver our investment program on time, on budget. It's not always easy in such a volatile market, but to actually get boots on the ground and kind of the infrastructure build, that's what we're all about. That's what we've delivered on.
Okay, that's fantastic. If I could just ask you to look at the camera. I don't know if you've got a monitor, which is slightly... That's where we want you, sir. Thank you very much indeed. When we cut it up later on, we want to see your full face, sir. Right, in terms of, though, the progress you're making, look, we know what Prime Minister Draghi is trying to do. We know the vast amount of money that Italy has been given. And, of course, Italy, the state of, is a huge shareholder in Snam as well, the biggest shareholder by a very long margin as well. Are you seeing progress coming through on the coronavirus recovery plan and it's coming... Snam into the economy for infrastructure spending, sir?
Yes, we think that every dollar we invest, there's a $3 multiplier on the GDP. So the government is very supportive of our investment program. We're talking to a lot of people in government about how to simplify and streamline the approvals processes. And hopefully all the reforms that are being written and enacted and passed through parliament will really enable us to boost and even accelerate the capex. That's what it's all about at the end of the day. Spending money in many parts of Italy that don't have other means of really investing and building that infrastructure. It's the same thing that the U.S. Federal government's trying to do there, and it's the same thing that Draghi's trying to do here, and there's a big investment program out there.
Marco, I just want to flesh out the picture a little bit for some of our audience who may not be so familiar with SNAM and your pipeline business and the role that you hope to play in the switch to renewables and alternative energies. I wonder if you could just spend a moment for us as we think about this approaching COP meeting. If you spend a moment for us just explaining how you feel that SNAM can capitalize on these growing trends towards decarbonization targets?
Thank you very much. So we are one of the world's largest infrastructure company. That means we transport gas via pipelines and we store gas underground in gas storages all over Europe, really, and now in the Middle East. When it comes to the energy transition, 2021 is going to go down as a year when it kind of all came together, not only because the US is back in the Paris Agreement, but because all the big agencies, the IEA, a lot of research people, they all agree now that we will need to get to net zero, to zero emissions. We will need to get electricity up significantly. Now it's 20% of the mix. It needs to go up to 50% of the mix. Today, electricity is 20. Then you have oil, coal, and gas making up the remaining 80%. In a fully decarbonized environment, you have electricity at 50. And then you'll have hydrogen at 25 and biofuels at 25, more or less. It can be some percentages off, but that's a big picture. Now, when it comes to the hydrogen and the biofuels, the biogas, the biomethane, they will run in pipelines. So our job is to convert the gas pipelines to hydrogen and to biogas pipelines, which are 100% sustainable. That's what we're doing. Right now, if you turn on your heater in Italy, the gas is flowing from Russia all the way from Siberia in pipelines. Tomorrow, we will have hydrogen produced in North Africa, in the North Sea, with solar and wind resources. And that hydrogen can travel through the existing pipeline. So we've been the first in the world to experiment different percentages of blending, up to 100% of hydrogen tested in existing pipes, and it works. So that's an energy transition using the infrastructure we have. And the very good news is that this new renewable energy will cost less than existing fossil fuel energy, which is a real breakthrough.
And can I ask you, I mean, we talk a lot about the different industries that are trying to move down this road. And obviously, will either be existing customers of yours or potentially could be customers going forward. But one area where it still troubles me is where hydrogen's opportunity is in transportation, because there does seem to be this competition between EVs and fuel cell and hydrogen. And I'm not clear at this stage who wins. It feels like EV has pulled ahead here. But do you see yourselves having a role in that industry?
We have a mobility division. We've announced the day before yesterday with Fincantieri, the world's first hydrogen ship. So when it comes to planes, ships, long distance trains and big trucks, it's going to be hydrogen. There's a consensus there. Airbus, the shipbuilders, Fincantieri and others. There's just no way you can put all that energy, heavy load, long distance energy into a battery. It's just too heavy. When it comes to light vehicles and cars, I think the good news is that it doesn't really matter because they're both electric solutions. Whether in 10, 15, 20 years' time, a battery costs less than a fuel cell, no one knows. But the good news is that the vehicle is the same. Okay. It's an electric vehicle.
Yeah, I've got to go, but I just want to ask one quick question because I've got another CEO waiting in the wings as well. Solar and wind power are not constant. Batteries and other storage systems are limited as well. Are we spending too much money on alternatives to hydrogen that actually just aren't going to be part of the major solution? I've got about a minute left, Marco.
The beauty of hydrogen is that you can store it easily. You can transport it easily. So, look, I think we need all hands on deck. The challenge is great. Goldman Sachs thinks there's $56 trillion of energy infrastructure needed to get to net zero. A big chunk of that is going to be in batteries. I think a bigger chunk than we expect, as you're hinting at, is going to be in the form of power to gas and hydrogen storage. So I don't want to say this is not the time to say let's compete and give up on some technologies. Let's put everything we have at work and the market's going to figure out what the best solution is.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to cnbc.com.
Or join us again on the show with Jeff Cutmore, Steve Sedgwick and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.